3, 2, 1.
Reed needs one more block. He goes all the way. Touchdown.
Coming to you from Winnipeg, Manitoba. This is Outside the Gridiron with Josh Fry Sam. And now, here's your host, Josh Fry Sam.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to Outside the Gridiron. Josh Fry Sam here, back for another mock draft on Outside the Gridiron here. This time, our 2021 edition for the NFL draft. This is going to be our first one of a couple. Might post one, two, three different mock drafts here before the draft kicks off. I've been watching a ton of tape, trying to keep up with free agency, because if you are a football fan, you know how insane it's been. Free agency frenzy is still going. And really, that's why I'm doing this mock draft episode, maybe a little bit prematurely. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know that I typically do the free agency frenzy podcast first, and then I go into the mock draft episode. But things are different this year just because of the nature of this year. That being that, because there's been so many big name cuts, and with the cap crunch and all of that happening, there's still some household names. There's a lot of household names that are just still sitting on the market right now waiting to be snatched up. And for that reason, I didn't want to go ahead and do the free agency frenzy episode just yet, because there are things that can definitely still change out there. It's really interesting because typically we see the upper echelon tier of free agency, these players that are definitely the household names, maybe even the superstars that are looking to get paid and secure the bag, as we like to say, they usually go in the first, I'm going to say 48 hours or so, anywhere from 48 to 72 hours or so. Okay. We have a few days of absolute just insanity, as many sports do when the free agency period hits. But the thing with this year is, because of all of these cuts and all of these big name players that are still just, they're out there looking for jobs still. And it's because of the cap crunch. And so this year's free agency frenzy period has really kind of dragged on a little bit, right? We would have been long gone by now. We would have been into the second tier of players, but now I wouldn't call these players that are still left out there upper echelon players, but these are kind of tier 1B players. And the reason why that is they might be a little bit older players, but these are players that are still going to come in onto any roster when they do get signed. These are players that are going to come in and be starters from day one. They're going to be impact players from day one. They're going to be contributors from day one. And they could be looked at in a leadership role from day one as well. What first guy that comes to my mind right now that's still out there is Ryan Kerrigan, longtime Washington football team player. Guys, whoever gets him is going to be lucky to get him in this period that we are in right now. But also, the other thing is, there are teams out there right now who still haven't fully figured out their cap situation. I know me as a Green Bay Packers fan, the Packers still have the option to restructure Aaron Rodgers' contract if they want, to create some more cap space and really go out and sign free agents if they want. But that's only a matter of if they feel that there's a free agent out there worth pursuing. Otherwise, they might stay put. And I know that the Packers aren't the only team out there that's like that. So that's the reason why we're seeing this free agency period just dragged on so long, is the cap situation is nuts still. And there's just been so many big name players that are still getting cut. Like, there are still players to come that are getting cut. So it's been really interesting to see that, along with the fact that if you are a fan of the salary cap and the financial aspect of sports like I am, it's been a treat to sit back and watch how the general managers of this league are really maneuvering the cap. They are adding voided years. How they are restructuring these contracts, where they are allocating money to, how they're structuring the contracts. It's just been, amazing to watch. And, I'm looking forward to continue watching it, because one of my favorite parts of the offseason is just after free agency frenzy has died down, just going and looking at all the contracts that have been signed and looking at how they're structured and really just preparing for next year's free agency, because really at the end of the day, starting to make my predictions. So this episode is actually going to be my fourth mock draft that I've done this year. But the thing is that all three other mock drafts that I've done have been before free agency. They were all before free agency. And so I don't really count those too much because I don't know if I mentioned this already, but before free agency hits, I have this set of needs for each team that I've kind of put together, that I've assembled, these needs where I think that they need to address in free agency and the draft. And then free agency hits, and I might as well throw that list into the garbage because free agency is, it's a frenzy. And so they have all these needs, a bunch of needs getting addressed, and then I have to go back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, what needs did they address? What could they still address? And then that also allows me to make a much more educated decision to come on the podcast here and hopefully provide you guys with some solid content. So let's get to mock draft 1.0, officially 1.0, but technically 4.0 for the 2021 NFL draft here, courtesy of myself, Josh Freisam. So this year, you guys, we have three teams with multiple picks. We've almost gotten used to seeing these picks getting compiled just with these teams that are in rebuild mode, to the point where they have three first round picks, such as we saw with the Oakland, now Las Vegas Raiders back in 2019. And then we also saw it last year with the Miami Dolphins in 2020. That's not the case this year, though. We have three teams with multiple picks in the first round, each of them holding two apiece. Those teams all follow one another in the top three, that being the Jacksonville Jaguars, the New York Jets, and the Miami Dolphins. With all that being said, let's get into it here. The Jacksonville Jaguars are now on the clock. Guys, this one's going to be no drama. I'm going to give a little bit of an analysis here, but this one is the Jacksonville Jaguars enter this draft with first-year head coach Urban Meyer. And as an Ohio State, the Ohio State University football fan, I am very happy to see Urban Meyer back in a coaching gig. I'm hoping that his health is all good and he is ready to return to coaching at the next level now. He's always been a college coach, but now he's coming into the next level. And it's been amazing to hear some of his interviews that he's done. Seems like it had to really just be the perfect spot for him in order to come back to coaching football, especially at the NFL level. And really, the Jacksonville Jaguars are just about as perfect of a spot as you can imagine. This might have been the most coveted head coaching job of the offseason, and Urban Meyer got it. The reason being, this team right now is in a quick rebuild slash, I don't even want to call it a rebuild. They're like almost in a transitional phase at this point. They have kind of gone through the rebuild. They have done a great job of compiling draft picks, drafting key positions, the premium positions. And not only that, but now they've put themselves in a position now with even this year's free agency to really make a quick transition. And I'm not going to say that they're going to be in the playoffs this year by any means, but the Jacksonville Jaguars, I mean, don't be surprised if in 2022 they're out there making noise with their first round pick, and that going to be Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback out of Clemson. No drama, just like last year. Joe Burrow went to the Cincinnati Bengals. We were going Trevor Lawrence to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And one thing that I want to touch on before we move on here with the Jacksonville Jaguars, because I called this somewhat of a transitional phase. And the reason why I called that is because this offensive line, if we look at the different areas of this roster, the offensive line looks well off. This is a veteran group that is going to protect the young quarterback very well. I'd expect them to address some depth needs later on in the draft at the offensive line position, but that's not of concern in the first round. The defensive line that they have built up now is really, really strong. Josh Allen, Clavon Chaisson last year, Malcolm Brown, the interior defensive lineman that they traded for from New Orleans, who is currently still in their cap dump right now. And then you have the secondary, which got a much needed jolt. You remember when they made their AFC championship run, they had a young Jalen Ramsey who has just been a dog from the moment he got in this league, and they had a prime AJ Bouye locking down, bookending that secondary. Now they have CJ Henderson, who they drafted last year, who is an incredible talent, an incredible corner. He's a for sure a number one corner. Love CJ Henderson. And now they go out in free agency and they pick up Shaquille Griffin, who just enjoyed his first Pro Bowl trip. So they have nice talents, bookending their secondary now. Not much on at the last level, like in the safety position, and we'll get to that later on in the draft. But what they've really done, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I tweeted this before, is they've built this soft nest for their young quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, to come into. Urban Meyer gets it. A lot of people have talked about, and I'm going to talk about this with the next pick right away. A lot of teams have not put their young quarterbacks in a position to succeed. And Trevor Lawrence is coming into this position where he is going to be protected well. He's going to have weapons to throw to, and he's on the opposite side of the ball. He's going to hopefully, by next year even, only have to play complementary football. Possibly. That's what he might have to do. But we all know Trevor Lawrence is such a generational talent that he's not going to have to play complementary football. This is a guy who's really going to be able to drive and put the football team on his back. But Trevor Lawrence is entering a situation right now that is almost a little bit reminiscent of what Patrick Mahomes walked into with Kansas City. Not saying that Trevor Lawrence is going to have the type of weapons that Patrick Mahomes did when he entered in with Kansas City. Not going to have Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, for example, and Sammy Watkins. But he does have weapons at his disposal. So with that being said, the transition into the NFL will be a lot smoother for Trevor Lawrence than it has been for a lot of quarterbacks in the past. On to pick number two, the New York Football Jets enter this draft with first-year NFL head coach Robert Saleh. Love to see the minority hire there by the New York Jets. Robert Saleh is now at the helm. And guys, this is where the draft really begins. Because like I said, Trevor Lawrence, he's a foregone conclusion at that number one overall pick. For this pick, you guys, I'm going to deviate away from what I'm going to do the rest of this draft. That is, I'm going to give my pick first, and then I'm going to give an analysis of the team and the pick afterwards. So the pick is Penei Sewell, tackle, Oregon. And a lot of people, this might be an eyebrow raiser. And that being because the big question possibly of this NFL offseason is, do the New York Jets, under the new umbrella that is Robert Saleh and company, do the New York Jets go ahead with Sam Darnold as their quarterback, who has really on the surface struggled? Or do they go and take a new quarterback and they draft who they believe is going to be their quarterback of the future? Now, if they do take Penei Sewell, which I have them taking him in this first mock draft, that pick would obviously mean that the Jets are running with Sam Darnold at quarterback if they are not drafting a replacement for him. Honestly, if they don't, until the Jets have made a trade for Sam Darnold, I don't see why I would think otherwise of them going forward with him. Like it until they deal him, Sam Darnold is the New York Jets quarterback in my mind. I have no reason to believe that they don't plan on moving forward with him. So with that being said, the easy argument, I'm going to take both sides of the coin here. The easy argument against Sam Darnold and the Jets drafting Zach Wilson is that, or even Justin Fields for that matter, I shouldn't take out Justin Fields of the conversation, is that Wilson and Fields both appear on the surface to possess more skills than Sam Darnold do. And that, and those skills being, they're both mobile. They seem to be able to make any throw on the field. I'm not quite sure if we did one of those tail of the tape bits. If we put Sam Darnold next to Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, I'm not quite sure Sam Darnold would check off more boxes necessarily than either of these guys. So a lot of people might be saying, well, Josh, Sam Darnold doesn't check off as many boxes, well, then why not just go with the other quarterback? Well, Sam Darnold was a third overall pick. Sam Darnold was a third overall pick for a reason. Sam Darnold still possesses a lot of skills, a lot of NFL skills. And so my argument with the Jets running with Sam Darnold, contrary to what we're seeing in Jacksonville right now, like I just finished talking about with Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer building this soft nest for him to come into, Sam Darnold was basically brought into the NFL, thrown on the concrete and said, figure it out. Obviously, that's not exactly what happened, but that is essentially what happened. Looking back on it, Todd Bowles and Jeremy Bates, who was the offensive coordinator and I believe the quarterback's coach at the time, in New York when Sam Darnold was drafted, they were not the welcoming committee that Sam Darnold needed. And then that was made apparent very quickly. Then, so they got canned. And now you have Adam Gase who steps in. And Adam Gase, I'm not even going to get into him. I'm not going to waste time on Adam Gase on my podcast. Don't want to get into him. Bottom line is, I don't even know why he was given a head coaching opportunity in the first place. And that was, again, made very apparent right away because he not only lost a job with Miami, but then he comes to New York Jets and he's fired after 1 year. So Adam Gase out of the picture as well. If we look at what the history is of Sam Darnold's career to this point, he hasn't had the right coaching staff around him. But let's also look at what the Jets have done with those coaching staffs in terms of putting talent around their young quarterback to succeed, like we are seeing Urban Meyer do for Trevor Lawrence here. Well, in 2018, the Jets go and they acquire Trumaine Johnson, a coveted cornerback, at the time, signed him to a lucrative 5-year, $72 million deal, which was insane money at the time. It's still pretty insane money, but at the time, that was very insane money. Then you have 2019, where this was the Jets' big year. They had a ridiculous amount of money. I want to say they had like $100 million in cap space, and boy, did they spend it. Okay, they went out and signed with GM Mike Maccagnan at the time. Okay, this was not Joe Douglas. GM Mike Maccagnan goes and signs CJ Mosley to a 5-year deal. He signs Le'Veon Bell to a 4-year deal, and he signs Jamison Crowder, the wide receiver, to a 3-year deal. Now, the problem for me isn't necessarily how much money they spent on these players. It's where they decided to allocate their dollars to. Okay, we have Sam Darnold, who is really trying to develop in the NFL, and we go out and our answer to putting more talent around him is to go add CJ Mosley, an inside off the ball linebacker. Is that like, I'm not quite sure. At the time when CJ Mosley signed to the New York Jets, I was ecstatic for the Jets. That's a big name player. CJ Mosley is an excellent inside linebacker. But when you're talking about putting your quarterback in a position to succeed and turning your NFL franchise around, an inside linebacker, an off-the-ball linebacker, is not the place to start. You're going to hear me mention a lot probably in this episode, and I have in the past. Premium positions. We have quarterback. We have the two offensive tackles. We have an edge rusher, someone who can get after the quarterback. And we have a cornerback, okay? Someone who can obviously shut down a wide receiver. So Trumaine Johnson, if we go back to Trumaine Johnson in 2018, he signed to that lucrative deal. I don't care about the money that he got signed for. It was a lucrative deal. It obviously did not work out for him. But the thing with Trumaine Johnson is I actually don't mind where they allocated those dollars, because like I just finished saying, they spent it on the cornerback position. Okay, so that's fine. They whiffed on the draft, on the free agency acquisition, obviously, but that happens from time to time. But then they go out and sign CJ Mosley. I already gave my spiel about him. Off the ball linebacker, not where you want to go with that. Then they go out and acquire Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell, I've said many times, a running back can be a quarterback's best friend. The problem was the fit schematically for Le'Veon Bell. That was not the guy to go after if you are Adam Gase and Mike Maccagnan. And that was obviously brought to light a lot right after he got signed, was how Adam Gase really just didn't even want Le'Veon Bell. And it showed. They didn't even use Le'Veon Bell correctly, how they should have used him, which really more or less made him useless to Sam Darnold. And then finally, you have probably the best acquisition out of the bunch, that being Jamison Crowder, the wide receiver. He's a weapon to throw to, and although Jamison Crowder isn't a wide receiver one, he's a high-end wide receiver two, at least they got him a weapon to throw to. So we have Sam Darnold, who's trying to develop at this point, who at this point is now on his second coaching staff with Adam Gase and company, which doesn't bode well for him. And then they're also not putting the proper pieces around him to succeed. Now enter Robert Saleh and company. Okay, and this is the main reason why I think Penei Sewell will be the second pick here in this draft. Let's look at Joe Douglas, who is the now general manager of the New York Jets. Let's look at Robert Saleh, who is the now head coach of the New York Jets. Where did Joe Douglas come from? The Philadelphia Eagles, for those of you that don't have the quick trivia answer. And where did Robert Saleh come from? He came from San Francisco. Now, what does San Francisco and Philadelphia have in common over the past few years? The answer being, they both have seen success. The Philadelphia Eagles won a Super Bowl, I believe in 2017, 2018 was that? Can't even remember now. And then you have the San Francisco 49ers, who made a Super Bowl back in 2019. And what did those two very talented rosters have in common? What were they able to hang their hat on? It was in the trenches. The Philadelphia Eagles everybody loved their dynamic pass rush that they had on the defensive side of the ball. They had a 5-6-man pass rush that they could go. They also had an elite offensive line in front of them with Jason Peters and Kelsey and Brandon Brooks. And I know that I'm forgetting another elite offensive lineman in there. The point is that they had an elite bunch in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And then you look at the San Francisco 49ers. I think they had 5 first-round picks on the defensive line, and then you go on the offensive line, they had like 4 first-round picks on the offensive line. Both of these guys, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, are coming from places where they saw success by building within the trenches. So if they saw success doing it one way, why would either of them change it? Why would either of them deviate away from that? And I understand we're talking about the quarterback position, which is the one position in probably all of sports that could trump any kind of need that you have. But in this case, my pitch to the Jets is Sam Darnold, again, is a former third overall pick for a reason who really hasn't been given a chance to succeed in the NFL yet. Put some pieces around your young quarterback by starting up front. Not only that, but you have Mike LaFleur also coming from San Francisco, who has a notoriously quarterback-friendly offense that he's bringing over to New York for Sam Darnold to work with. Put an offensive line in front of your quarterback, protect him so that he's not running for his life. Put some weapons around your quarterback in this quarterback-friendly offense. And then if you feel that he is not your option, go ahead and take your quarterback of the future. Penei Sewell is also very athletic and versatile enough and large enough to play inside or outside. He played left tackle at Oregon, but he has the ability to shift into guard if you want him to. So you drafted Mekhi Becton, the absolute monstrosity of a human being last year. And then you have Penei Sewell, who you can stick right beside him and have an absolute dominant two cornerstone pieces there to start your coaching tenure. That is my pitch to New York Jets. Penei Sewell, number two overall to the Oregon, or to the New York Jets from the Oregon Ducks football program there. Thank you very much. Let's move on to pick number three. We have the Miami Dolphins, whose rebuild with Brian Flores has gone much quicker than I originally thought it would. The free agency they brought in last year with Byron Jones, and they brought in Kyle Van Noy and Emmanuel Ogba and all that, they really made a difference. And to see a team spend that much money on free agency and it actually work out the way it did, that was pretty incredible for the Miami Dolphins. And really at this point, the Miami Dolphins are just looking to build on that. Simple as that. They're looking to solidify themselves as a perennial playoff contender in a division in the AFC East that has really become interesting, right? We thought the Buffalo Bills just looked like clear cut. They were just going to run this division for however long. But now you have the Miami Dolphins who are on the come up. You have the New England Patriots who all of a sudden, I don't know what got into Bill Belichick. He decided to just start throwing money around to everybody. So now you have three teams that are really kind of jostling in this division. I do still think Buffalo runs this division, but it's definitely got a lot more interesting. So from the Miami Dolphins standpoint, This is the first spot in the draft where you want to talk about trades and one of the exciting aspects of the draft. This is where I could see that happening. This is one of the spots. I don't think that it will happen because of the nature of where the Miami Dolphins are. I think that they're going to stay put because, again, this is a team that knows that they can get it done. They're just looking to take that next step. So for me, why would you go out and trade back when you can go get a blue chip player at third overall, right? And add to all this beauty that you have built. In terms of contenders, people that could trade up into this number three overall pick, to keep in mind, I don't think that the Falcons would climb one spot from the fourth overall pick, but you could see the Panthers, the Broncos even. I don't really think the Broncos. I think the Broncos are going to stay put with Drew Lock, but Broncos have to be put in the conversation. So you have the Panthers, the Broncos, the Niners, or even the Patriots. And the Patriots are a little bit tough to make a case for here just because, not because of what the need is, but the Patriots are tough because they're in that number 15 spot. So to move up 12 spots into number three, that is going to take a lot of draft capital. I don't know if they're willing to do that. Well, and the other thing is, sorry, I'm just realizing this now. Miami and New England, that's not going to happen. Miami and New England are in the same division. So that's off the table. Pats aren't moving up here. Maybe even the Detroit Lions, who knows, they might be able to sneak up there if they feel that they want to move on from Jared Goff or they want to start building something new behind Jared Goff. In this mock draft, though, Miami Dolphins, I have them staying put, and I have them taking a guy who might surprise a lot of people, maybe the second surprise here of the draft, that being Kyle Pitts, the tight end out of Florida. And guys, Kyle Pitts is, the argument can be made for Kyle Pitts that he is the best overall football player in this dang draft. He is a freak of nature. He is a long, physical, athletic specimen, 6'5", 240 that I have him weighing in at. He is a tight end who runs like a wide receiver, okay? So he is just a mismatch problem, really, at the end of the day. And again, going back to our conversation about putting pieces around your quarterback to win. The Miami Dolphins have done that in free agency. They've added Will Fuller, which is amazing. That's a great addition. Now go out and get Kyle Pitts to pair with Mike Gesicki, the other tight end there in Miami. Mike Gesicki can not only fill the vertical threat, but Michael Gesicki can also block. Kyle Pitts is not so much of a blocking tight end. He is, again, he's just more of a receiving threat, but my God, is he a damn good receiving threat. So Kyle Pitts here, tight end out of Florida. Again, I think Trevor Lawrence, probably just on the big board aspect of things, probably the best football player in this draft. But Kyle Pitts, the argument can 100% be made for him being the best football player. So to get him at number 3 overall, that is a high value pick for the Miami Dolphins. I think they're running away with this pick. We have Trevor Lawrence, Penei Sewell, Kyle Pitts, 1, 2, 3 off the board. Let's move on to the Atlanta Falcons at number 4, who enter this draft with their own first-year head coach in Arthur Smith, the former Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator. Guys, the Atlanta Falcons are in a tough spot. They're in a tough spot. I was going to actually, I didn't finish writing this article, but I was going to write an article on them a couple months ago, actually, at the start of free agency, where the Atlanta Falcons are kind of in a position with a regressing aging quarterback in Matt Ryan, who also has an aging core around him. They just lost Keanu Neal, which was a tough loss for them. Ricardo Allen is also gone from that team. Julio Jones, who I actually had as a trade candidate. I don't know if anybody would be willing to trade for a $20 million receiver, but I still had him as a trade candidate nonetheless. They just have an aging core, and although they have a talented core on paper, I just don't know if this is like a championship kind of roster. Maybe they're a dark horse playoff team. So with all of that being said, just them being kind of in limbo here a little bit, I'm going to say they start this rebuild process. They're not going to go Zach Wilson, though. I think they're going to take Justin Fields. Justin Fields, for my money, is the second best quarterback in this draft. And the argument can 100% be made for Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson is being compared to the likes of Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes, and I absolutely see it. I absolutely see it on tape, the way he's able to make those off-platform throws. But when you look at Justin Fields, I think he checks off just about every box for you, especially the one box that Zach Wilson doesn't have, and that is, for Justin Fields, he has the build. Justin Fields is 6'3", 225 pounds, okay? Like, this is a solid human being playing the quarterback position. And not only is he mobile, he's faster than Zach Wilson. He's great decision maker, very accurate with the ball. Justin Fields, for my money, is the second best quarterback in this draft. And not to mention the icing on the cake with this pick before we move on is that Justin Fields is a Georgia native. So going back to Atlanta, that would be a 100% a dream come true for Justin Fields. And I think that is the pick that the Atlanta Falcons have to make here. I don't think that they go for a different type of player here. Like, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is probably the best player left on the board at this point, but for the Atlanta Falcons to go out and take another receiver, I don't know about that. Maybe they do. Maybe that would be pretty scary. Julio Jones, Ja'Marr Chase, and Calvin Ridley in the same offense, and Hayden Hurst even at the tight end position. That would be wow, that'd be frightening. But I'm going to say Justin Fields goes here at number 4. Let's go to number 5, you guys, and we have the Cincinnati Bengals on the clock. Let's get right into it here. This is the first trade of the draft, you guys. Cincinnati Bengals, who are in a position right now where they have so many holes on this roster. The Cincinnati Bengals have done a great job in free agency this year. Listen, I'm not ready to give them an A-plus grade or anything like that on the free agency, but compared to especially last year, this is an A++ for the Cincinnati Bengals. If we're just comparing it to last year, Cincinnati Bengals have done a much better job this year. They filled some crucial holes, but still they don't have a solid foundation built yet. They're still trying to build this foundation. With that being said, why not trade back a couple of spots, acquire some more, recoup some more draft capital, and really continue this rebuild here around your young quarterback, Joe Burrow. With that being said, the Bengals have traded the 5th overall pick to the Carolina Panthers in exchange for the 8th overall pick and a 3rd round pick in 2021 and a 3rd round pick in 2022. And from here, you guys, with the Carolina Panthers now on the clock, the pick is pretty simple. There's not too many positions in football that you trade up for. Quarterback is one of them. And when you have Zach Wilson, who is being rumored to go 2nd overall to the New York Jets here, for him to fall to number 5 for the Carolina Panthers, the fit is there. and the talent is there. Go grab Zach Wilson if you're the Carolina Panthers. No brainer. Let's move on to pick number 6. Philadelphia Eagles are now on the clock. And the Philadelphia Eagles, you guys, they're kind of in a weird transition period right now with first-year head coach Nick Sirianni, the former offensive coordinator there with the Indianapolis Colts. The Eagles have this aging core who we'd maybe like to think still has maybe an outside shot at getting into the playoffs here. But honestly, I just don't think that they can win enough games here to be contenders. And not to mention the middle of the pack, an 8-8, 7-9, 9-7 team. That is the worst spot to be in the NFL. It's either you go make your run or really it's you're in a rebuild mode. Those are the two places that you really want to be in the NFL. And with that being said, I think that it's rebuild time for the Philadelphia Eagles. They shipped off Carson Wentz. They have a ton of dead cap under their belt right now. You do not see contending teams. It's very, very rare to see contending teams with a lot of dead cap. And so just for future, if you are ever looking at a team's salary cap situation and a very telling sign to see whether or not this team really has a big shot to make a run. Oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes if their dead cap is upper echelon there of the league, there's a chance that this team isn't necessarily considered to be a playoff contenders. A lot of their cap's being eaten up in the dead pool. So with all this being said, they're running with Jalen Hurts as their quarterback. Carson Wentz is shipped off to Indianapolis, who we'll get to shortly. If you are the Eagles here, you guys, it's pretty simple. You are in rebuild mode. You take the best player available left on the board. And that is, as I just finished mentioning before, Ja'Marr Chase, the wide receiver out of LSU. Guys, this is a dominant receiver. Didn't play in 2020. Didn't really need to. Okay, Ja'Marr Chase is just a dominant possession receiver with pretty freakish athletic abilities, and he would be joining a room with Jalen Reagor. He'd be joining weapons such as Dallas Goedert, Alshon Jeffrey, Zach Ertz, who I expect to be traded, but he's there for now. And also they have running back Miles Sanders. That's a great room to have as far as weapons are concerned. So I think that when you're talking about from a rebuild standpoint for the Philadelphia Eagles, this could really very quickly, depending on what they do with their draft picks, who they trade and whatnot, who they decide to cut. This could be a relatively quick turnaround for the Philadelphia Eagles. Maybe we are talking in two off seasons from now as a team that's ready to really flip the switch here and maybe make a run back into the playoffs. Ja'Marr Chase to the Philadelphia Eagles here, wide receiver. They are kicking off this rebuild with a bang and really getting a high value pick here at number 6 overall. Ja'Marr Chase is he's going to be a ton of fun to watch, especially in this Nick Sirianni offense. The Detroit Lions are up next and at number 7. And I know there's a lot of people that don't really care about the Detroit Lions. This is a team that is really just kind of there. You know, Detroit's doing their thing. I don't know from a year-to-year basis really what Detroit, what their angle is. I kind of was able to hang my hat on Matthew Stafford. And I was like, oh, well, at least I have Matthew Stafford. Well, that's not really the case anymore. They have Jared Goff. A significant downgrade. The Detroit Lions are in a rebuild with new head coach Dan Campbell. They've whiffed on free agents. They've done a terrible job in developing. And I'm really glad it's not Matthew Stafford that is there suffering anymore. I have a ton of respect for Matthew Stafford. And although he's staying in my conference, gone to the Los Angeles Rams, I couldn't be happier for Matthew Stafford. He is 100% earned the right to play on a playoff contender. So the Detroit Lions, they have holes all over the place. And I think this is another spot where we could really see them trade just based on who's left on the board. Trey Lance is the big name left here, right? He is the big quarterback left. And we could once again see the Niners, maybe even the Pats, maybe even the Washington football team move into the conversation here. Washington would have to move up from number 19. So again, that's a really big long shot. But again, there's a couple of teams that are in contention here to move up at number 7. I just think, although I'm kind of contradicting myself with my philosophy with the Cincinnati Bengals, just recouping draft picks here for the rebuild process, I'm going to say that the Detroit Lions go ahead and take a cornerback in back-to-back years with their first round pick, this time being cornerback Patrick Surtain III out of Alabama. And Patrick Surtain is oh my goodness. I didn't realize Patrick Surtain was a freak athlete like this until I saw him on his pro day. He put up incredible numbers at the pro day with a 39-inch vertical, ran in the 4.4s, the mid-4.4s with his 40-yard dash. I think he had a 10-foot, 11-inch broad jump as well, if I'm remembering my numbers correct. And then they also have Jeff Okuda on the opposite side. And Jeff Okuda, I think, is going to have a really strong bounce back year. He struggled mightily last year and had high expectations as a third overall pick. But this year, if they can go out, draft another premium position here, they have two lockdown corners bookending their secondary. This is big. This would be huge for the Detroit Lions going forward. You got to stop the pass in the NFL. It's pretty simple as that. And Patrick Surtain, he's an incredible talent. He is without question. I know that Caleb Farley is in the conversation here for being the top cornerback in the draft. But I think Patrick Surtain is the top cornerback here, no question. So let's move on to pick number 8, where we see the Cincinnati Bengals, who are up again. I finished talking about how they've had a great free agency. Once again, honestly, at this point, with Trey Lance still on the board, Cincinnati's probably fielding calls again. They're probably taking calls from the Patriots. They're probably taking calls from the Niners. Maybe even the Broncos to jump up one spot. They're probably taking calls for teams to go trade up to grab Trey Lance here. But I'm going to say that the Bengals, they probably don't want to, just based on their needs. This is the number one need for the Bengals. I didn't care what they did in the offseason. They needed to go out and address the offensive line. Priority number 1, 2, and 3 for the Cincinnati Bengals was to address the offensive line. That's what they do here. They go take offensive tackle Rashawn Slater out of Northwestern University. And this is a high value pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. Rashawn Slater is a guy who has been said by Daniel Jeremiah, a guy who I follow very closely, one of the draft experts at NFL Network. He's been said he can play all 5 positions on the offensive line. And going to a team like the Cincinnati Bengals, who have holes at just about all 5 positions on the offensive line, I think that this is a pretty safe pick for them to go here. Rashawn Slater would be able to slot in from day one and be an impact player at any of the positions that they need him to. I probably would see him filling in at one of the guard spots, maybe right guard, but he has the ability absolutely to go out and play tackle if they need him to, protect Joe Burrow's blind spot possibly. I know they have Jonah Williams over there, but they have a lot of stuff to figure out. At the end of the day, the Cincinnati Bengals need to go take this pick here. Rashawn Slater is a very high value pick. I think that this is honestly could be in steal territory at number 8 overall for this kid. Let's go on to number 9 overall, the Denver Broncos. And Denver is once again, John Elway is once again making noise this offseason. They added Kyle Fuller. They added Ronald Darby to give that secondary a jolt after AJ Bouye didn't really work out too well last year. And I really do think that the Denver Broncos in this position, they field offers. I think that they ultimately decide to really stay put and grab a versatile piece for the defensive side of the ball, though. And although Trey Lance, I know that the Broncos fandom might be sitting there at this point in the draft. They're sitting at 9th overall, and they have Trey Lance staring them dead in the eyes, right? With Drew Locke as their current quarterback, who has really struggled at times. I'm still a believer in Drew Locke. I think that Drew Locke can still get the job done at the NFL level. I'm very optimistic on what his future is in the NFL. With that being said, I think that they stick with him. I think that they just add another piece, a versatile piece, and they go Micah Parsons, the linebacker out of Penn State here. They have a hole there, and that would really bolster the offensive line, or really bolster the defensive side of the ball. And the other thing is Vic Fangio being the defensive coordinator there, a guy who's known for those multiples defense and really just shifting pieces all over the place. Mike Parsons, I think, would be a great fit in the Vic Fangio defense. So welcome aboard to Mile High, Micah Parsons. Dallas Cowboys at 10th overall, and this is kind of where we're going to start picking up the pace here with these picks. Dallas Cowboys, I don't really think the Cowboys move here. I know the conversation, again, will be Trey Lance is sitting out there. Does someone come and trade up for him? I don't think that they move here. And the biggest reason why I do not think that they move here is because they have their division rival, the New York Giants, sitting at the 11th overall pick right behind them. So if they want somebody and the New York Giants, they move behind the New York Giants, that could be dangerous territory for them, especially if the Giants maybe have a similar need. The Giants are for sure just to prevent the Cowboys from grabbing that guy, that same guy that they might have their eye on. That could happen. So the Cowboys instead are going to take advantage of the position that they're in. They're going to draft Caleb Farley, the second ranked quarterback on cornerback on my board here out of Virginia Tech. Caleb Farley is a really a prototypical cornerback in this year's draft, and I really like the upside that he presents. He can just be a lockdown, put him on an island, man-to-man corner. And the Cowboys, at the end of the day, last thing I'll say on this is the Cowboys, that was their biggest issue, obviously, by far last year, was they just had nobody to cover anybody. And so this is going to alleviate that issue greatly. Caleb Farley is a tremendous talent, and I think he would look very good in a Dallas Cowboys uniform. Let's go on to pick number 11. This is the New York Giants, and our second trade of the mock draft is coming up here, you guys. The New York Giants trade the 11th overall pick to the New England Patriots, who continue to make noise here in this offseason. The Patriots receive the 11th overall pick and a fourth round pick in this year's draft, that being the 116th pick overall. The New York Giants would receive the 15th overall pick, replacing the Patriots there, and then the 46th overall pick, which is a second round pick in this year's draft. And again, much like the other trade in this draft, it's a no-brainer. You're really only trading up in this position for one need, and that is the quarterback position. Quarterback Trey Lance out of the North Dakota State University would be a tremendous fit here. And we have seen the New England Patriots work with Tom Brady for however many decades, for two decades plus, and then we see them switch over to the exact polar opposite player in Cam Newton, who is just a massive quarterback who likes to run. Okay, we have pocket passer Brady compared to Cam Newton. Maybe this is Bill Belichick really, especially the fact that he brought Cam back. Maybe this is Bill Belichick turning a corner here and saying, okay, let's get into the mobile quarterback side of things. I really do like Mac Jones' fit in that offense as well, but maybe he does turn to the more mobile side of things and goes with Trey Lance, who does possess a ton of upside at the quarterback position here in the NFL. Trey Lance would be entering a position here where he'd be behind Cam Newton for a year probably, and then he'd be expected to take over the reins, and I think that would be fine for him. Have a year to sit behind Cam, learn what he needs to learn, learn how to become a consummate professional, and then take over the keys to the car from there. Let's go on to the 12th overall pick, the San Francisco 49ers. And the San Francisco 49ers, the big reason, the other big thing, side note with that trade that just happened here with the New England Patriots, is the San Francisco 49ers, I have had them in all my previous mock drafts taking Trey Lance at number 12. And so I really do think that if Trey Lance fell to the 49ers, they would be sprinting up to the podium to give in their card for him. So that's kind of a big deal, is that New England Patriots would be hopping. They would be leapfrogging the San Francisco 49ers to really sweep Trey Lance from under their feet here. And the 49ers, if that were to happen, they'd be choked in this situation. I think 49ers fans would be choked in this situation. Trey Lance, who they probably at this point have tried trading up for multiple times, is now gone right before their eyes. They still do have a needed quarterback. Mac Jones is who I like a ton. I like Mac Jones a lot, but Mac Jones is staring them dead in the face here as well. But I just don't think he quite fits with what their scheme is and what they're trying to do on the offensive side of the ball. So I say that in this mock, they pass on Mac Jones and they go and take a lineman who I love. That being interior offensive lineman Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. And Elijah Vera Tucker has also been said to be a possible perennial all-pro kind of talent. Okay, Elijah, he's another versatile piece who can play all over the line. I think he'll slot in at that guard position, left or right guard, and really just be there for the next 10 years for whoever is being the quarterback there in Santa Clara. Let's go over to 13th overall pick, and this is the Los Angeles Chargers, who enter this draft with first-year head coach Brandon Staley. I'm definitely interested to see what he and defensive coordinator Ronaldo Hill do on the defensive side of the ball, and the biggest reason being is that the Los Angeles Chargers have been for years now a 4-3 defense, four down linemen, three linebackers up. Now, coming over from the Vic Fangio scheme and in the Los Angeles Rams scheme there, Brandon Staley and Ronaldo Hill are going to be bringing over the 3-4 defense. So do they actually go to the 3-4? Do they stick with the 4-3? We will see what exactly it is that they do. Maybe they go into a multiples defense. I know that I like Joey Bosa with his hand in the dirt getting after the quarterback. I don't know how much I like him standing up, but We will have to see how that plays out. Now, at 13th overall, you guys, there's three directions that I could see the Chargers going here. A, protect your quarterback by drafting Christian Darrisaw, the tackle out of Virginia Tech. Or you could go ahead and replace Melvin Ingram with one of two pass rushing options. You have Quiddy Pay out of Michigan or Jalen Phillips out of Miami. And I'm going to say they go edge rusher, Jalen Phillips out of Miami. And this could be a shock to a lot of people who are paying attention to the prospects in this draft. Quiddy Pay is probably the consensus number one pass rusher in this draft. Not on my board, though. I do think that Jalen Phillips entering this draft is the number one pass rusher in this draft. Jalen Phillips is a little bit more athletic in my mind. I think he has a little bit more explosiveness in his game. You can line both guys up all over the place, but I also think that Jalen Phillips will fit into this role, into this defense a little bit better. Quiddy Pay is more of a Joey Bosa, where he's got to have his hand in the dirt all the time. Joey Bosa is kind of a freak athlete where he can stand up. I'm sure Quiddy Pay, if he needed to stand up, he would be able to do it, but this is just not an ideal defense for him. So from a schematic standpoint, I'm going to say Jalen Phillips is going to be the pick here for the Los Angeles Chargers. And that brings us to 14th overall and my division rivals, the Minnesota Vikings. Being a Green Bay Packers fan, you guys, I've grown a tremendous amount of respect for head coach Mike Zimmer over the years, who in my books, is one of the best defensive minds in the NFL. And it was kind of crazy to see how in pain he was last year. Mike Zimmer hangs his hat on his defense. He has had a top end defense for as long as I can remember, except for last year. Last year they were abysmal. They could go offensive line here, address the offensive line position, which they desperately need. But I think in this mock draft that they go with Quiddy Pay, the edge rusher out of Michigan. They just need someone to get after the quarterback, plain and simple. They addressed Patrick Peterson, the cornerback position, by bringing him in on a one-year deal, which is awesome. A nice veteran presence on the back end. But now they need to go out and grab a pass rusher because they were not getting after the quarterback last year. I think that they were last in the league, if not bottom five in the league in getting after the quarterback last year. So this is a need 100% for the Minnesota Vikings. Let's go on to the New York Giants, who are back up here at 15th overall in the New England Patriots' old spot. They're back on the clock here. Joe Judge, who is entering his second draft with the G-men. The Giants did a great job of being aggressive in free agency. They brought in Kenny Golladay on the offensive side of the ball. They brought in John Ross on the offensive side of the ball. Kyle Rudolph at the tight end position. And then on the opposite side of the ball, they also brought in Adoree Jackson. So they did lose Dalvin Tomlinson, their very talented interior defensive lineman. But they went ahead and they addressed a bunch of other needs and really put pieces around Daniel Jones to take that next step. So now the trio that the Giants have is Kenny Golladay. They have Daniel Jones, and they have Saquon Barkley. And then they have Sterling Shepard as well as their number two. They have Darius Slayton as their number three. And guess what? With this pick right here at number 15, I think the best player available is Jalen Waddle, the wide receiver out of Alabama. And I think Joe Judge jumps all over it. Give me Jalen Waddle, the speedster. This guy will be very reminiscent for a lot of you of, if you remember, Henry Ruggs, who went to the Las Vegas Raiders. These guys are running about the same speed. He plays the same kind of game as Tyreek Hill does. Okay. And honestly, probably has more refined route running and hands than Tyreek did coming out of college. I like Jalen Waddle a lot. He's a game breaker. Okay. And he would also, pairing him with John Ross, I'm not ready to say that John Ross is going to be a difference maker in this offense. But the fact that the Giants could have Jalen Waddle and John Ross on the field at the exact same time is kind of scary for a defense. Those are things that keep defensive coordinators up at night with the amount of speed that both of those guys possess. These are both guys who are running in the low 4.3s, high 4.2s, you know? Like this is speed. This is speed kills in the NFL, and this is what the Giants would become. This is what the NFL has turned into, and I think that Joe Judge is going to follow suit on that at the 15th overall pick here. That would be a scary receiving court, especially if Daniel Jones is able to take that next step at the quarterback position, and Saquon Barkley is coming back totally healthy. 16th overall pick, the Arizona Cardinals. They are hoping that this year is their year. They went out, were aggressive in free agency. They grabbed J.J. Watt, the coveted free agent, A.J. Green, to fill in for the old guy role that Larry Fitzgerald once held at the wide receiver position. And then they also have Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury, who should by now be fully in sync on the offensive side of the ball, understand what they're trying to do. They also have DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, Andy Isabella, Chandler Jones, Byron Murphy, Buda Baker. Okay, this team has playmakers. It's not like they can't go make a playoff run. The biggest question has been for this team is, can they put it together? That's, once again, the question entering 2021. They have a high-powered offense. They have playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. But can they put it together and make a run? Honestly, Cliff Kingsbury's NFL coaching career really relies on it. Like, I would not be surprised if the Cardinals fail to make the playoffs this year. I would not be surprised to see Cliff Kingsbury on the hot seat and maybe see a coaching change there, right? And we knew this. When he drafted Kyler Murray at first overall, Kyler became the popular pick, but he wasn't leading up to the draft. He wasn't by any means the popular pick. And Cliff Kingsbury was a college coach coming into this thing with the air raid offense. And supposed there was just a ton of hype, right? And so if Kyler Murray really flopped, like he might be going down with him in a sense. And Kyler Murray hasn't flopped per se, but he hasn't been a top 10 quarterback in my mind by any means. And the Arizona Cardinals as a whole, because your job is to, as a head coach, is to coach the whole team, the Arizona Cardinals have not really made that much noise. So with that being said, I think that they go out here and they grab another weapon to add to this offense. Another weapon. That being DeVonta Smith, the wide receiver out of Alabama, goes one pick after his buddy Jalen Waddle does. The Arizona Cardinals have options at this pick. They could trade back because Mac Jones is still on the board. So teams like Washington or Chicago or even Pittsburgh could be intrigued to move up in this position. They could also go DeVonta Smith, like I just mentioned, or they could go J.C. Horn because they do still have a need at the cornerback position beside Byron Murphy there. So I could see a J.C. Horn going here as well. But I'm going to say DeVonta Smith because A.J. Green, I don't know how long A.J. Green's going to be there. I don't know what A.J. Green's role is going to be in that offense. And if you can have DeVonta Smith paired alongside DeAndre Hopkins for a couple of years, that could be pretty nasty with Kyler Murray tossing them the ball. Let's move on to the 17th overall pick, and we have the Las Vegas Raiders, who have had one of the weirdest off seasons in the NFL this year after being very vocal and active in the offseason over the past couple of years. They go ahead and they're kind of active for a different reason. It's not for adding people, they're cutting people. They cut LaMarcus Joyner, Tyrell Williams, Gabe Jackson. They traded Trent Brown. There's even talks of Marcus Mariota, the backup quarterback, being traded, but he ended up staying because he took a pay cut. Then they go out and sign Kenyon Drake to a deal that makes him the 15th highest paid running back in the NFL. This is a guy who's backing up Josh Jacobs. Kind of weird plays there by the Raiders. I definitely saw the LaMarcus Joyner, Tyrell Williams cuts coming, but when you're talking about cutting Gabe Jackson and then trading Trent Brown, maybe the Trent Brown trade comes. I could see that, but it's still kind of weird. They did make two very nice signings though. Yannick Ngakoue and Solomon Thomas both on that line to go get after the quarterback, an area of need without a doubt. But with all of these offensive linemen being cut, the Raiders' primary need here is pretty straightforward. And I think that they take the best player available on the board at that position, that being the offensive tackle position. And to fill that role will be Christian Darrisaw, the offensive tackle out of Virginia Tech. I really like what Christian Darrisaw brings to the table here. Physical presence, who is really good in pass blocking as well, obviously need to be at the offensive tackle position. And Christian Darrisaw is going to be a guy who, to put it simple, he's going to be a plug-and-play guy from day one. Fill the need right away, and he's going to take off from there. He's improved in every single year that he's been at Virginia Tech, and I would think that the Raiders would make this pick without even blinking an eye. Let's move on to the 18th overall pick, Miami Dolphins. And at this point for the Dolphins, they've addressed a weapon for their quarterback, but now they're going to continue to add to the offensive side of the ball, not with a weapon, but a guy who can protect their most valuable asset, that being Tua Tagovailoa, their quarterback. They're going to do this by drafting Wyatt Davis, the interior offensive lineman from Ohio State University. Ohio State University. Wyatt Davis was a ton of fun to watch this year. This is a guy very similar to Christian Darrisaw, except in the interior, a plug-and-play guy. He's going to come in day one. They have a need at the guard position. Wyatt Davis is going to come in there, be an impact player day one on the interior. Very simple pick for me. That was one of the easier picks of the day, just based on where we were at in the draft. And this leaves the 19th overall pick. And at this point, you guys, if you are a Chicago Bears fan, or really even a Washington football team fan for that matter, when you were talking about picks 16, 17, 18, and you don't see your team trading up for a quarterback, there's probably a lot of fans that are screaming at the television by this point, passed out on the ground from screaming so much. And especially if you're a Chicago Bears fan. Okay, the Washington football team's a little bit better off right now. They got Ryan Fitzpatrick, but Chicago's in a tough spot right now. And so their fans are probably screaming at the TV by this point. They're going to scream a little bit more. And I'm going to say that the Washington football team at 19th overall here takes Mac Jones, the quarterback out of Alabama. And the reason being is I don't think I could put together a more perfect situation for Mac Jones myself on paper. This is 1 year behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is notorious for being a great leader and a great mentor for young quarterbacks. Put Mac Jones in a situation similar to what we saw Jordan Love in with the Packers this year. Essentially a practice squad quarterback, gets to sit back, learn from a consummate professional, pick his brain day in, day out. And then next year, or even we could use the Trey Lance reference as well in this mock drafts case, sit behind a veteran for a year, maybe even two, and you get thrusted into that role. Mac Jones doesn't need to come in, thrusted into a role and be the savior right off the bat here. They've got a talented roster here that's going to be there not only this year, but it's going to be there next year as well and years to come. Love what Ron Rivera is building over there in Washington. I think Mac Jones here is kind of the easy pick, to be honest. Like they need a quarterback. Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't the future quarterback for them, and neither is Kyle Allen. So I'm going to say Mac Jones, quarterback, Alabama, goes here at 19th overall. Let's go on to the 20th overall pick to the Chicago Bears fans who are passed out on the ground right now. 20th overall, they do not have a quarterback that is available really to be taken at this point. Next available quarterback might be Kyle Trask, and he is not a first-round pick in my mind. Let's not even talk about Kyle Trask right now. They're going to address the next position of need on their board. That is the offensive tackle position. And they're going to go with Jalen Mayfield, the offensive tackle out of Michigan, who really could come in as another plug-and-play player at the offensive tackle position. He can flip. He's kind of a swing tackle as well, in a sense. He can play right or left side. And the Chicago Bears, this is a big need for them. You know, and again, it's addressing a premium position for another NFL team. Take Jalen Mayfield here. It's the guy who's just going to be rock solid for you. I really do like this pick. I like the value of this pick. This is the kind of guy that's going to be a starter for you for the next decade, you know? And so Chicago Bears fans, I don't know if you should be too upset. I know that it obviously wasn't the popular pick in a quarterback, but offensive tackle here at number 20 overall is nothing to really shake your head at either. 21st overall, we have the Indianapolis Colts going here, and they have some needs at offensive tackle. I could see them going Liam Eichenberg, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame here, who would again be another plug and play. I'm using that term a lot today, but that's a term that you hear a lot around draft time. Plug and play would be Liam Eichenberg at offensive tackle, but then you also have the cornerback position, which they desperately, desperately need. And I think that they're going to go cornerback here. And the reason being, I think that there are more offensive tackles to be had in the second round than there are cornerbacks. So with that being said, the Indianapolis Colts are going to go take that premium position of cornerback first. And they're going to take Eric Stokes out of Georgia, who has really been coming on over the past month or so on draft boards. He's really raised his stock. And then he goes out on his pro day and runs, I think, a 4.25 40. Are you kidding me? That is how you raise your draft stock right there, by running 40 yards in 4.25 seconds, ladies and gentlemen. A guy who is really an athletic freak, as I just finished mentioning with his fast 40 time. Athletic freak, really can cover the ball well, makes great plays on the ball. One knock on him so far that I've read is that he doesn't have fast play speed, and that is different from just his regular ability to run fast. Play speed and just speed is two different things. Speed is speed. Speed is I'm going to run from here, point A to point B as fast as I can. He has that. Play speed is mental. Play speed is, am I processing what is going on the field quick enough? Am I processing what the offensive is doing? Am I processing what my responsibility is? And then am I processing what I need to do, the play, what's happening in the moment as well? Eric Stokes apparently has struggled with that a little bit. He has slower play speed and hasn't quite allowed him to kick that regular speed that he has, that freakish athletic ability. It's kind of hindered him from kicking that into high gear. So something for him to work on, but I think that his athletic abilities is really going to maybe blow away a team and really allow him to be a first round pick here. Tennessee Titans at 22nd overall, and there's a lot of places the Titans could go here. This was probably my toughest pick of the first round was the Tennessee Titans, just based on the amount of needs that they have, where they are as a franchise. The Titans could go edge rusher here. Even though they brought in Bud Dupree off free agency, which is a great signing for them, they still do need another guy to get after the quarterback to add to that rotation. But for me, they could also go wide receiver here. But for me, I really do think they lost Malcolm Butler. They lost Adoree Jackson in free agency as well. And with that being said, they need to start replenishing this secondary. And so J.C. Horn, the cornerback out of South Carolina, is probably the best cornerback available on the board at this point. I'm going to say they go ahead and they take the cornerback from the Gamecock, who is the son, if you did not know, for those NFL historians out there, if you remember Joe Horn, the name Joe Horn, the former New Orleans Saint, great wide receiver, loved watching Joe Horn at my young age. J.C. Horn possesses a lot of the athletic abilities that his dad does. And JC, for that reason, JC Horn is really a great playmaker with the ball in the air. Kind of has that wide receiver instinct just kind of built into him. I'm going to say that JC Horn, the Titans really like that. They go ahead and they take him at 22nd overall and they start to rebuild that secondary because they already have Christian Fulton there. I think that they really do need to go grab another cornerback. So, at 23 overall, we have the New York Jets. And after they go ahead and they grab Penei Sewell, they're going to go ahead on the opposite side of the ball. To my point earlier, Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas have seen success by building through the trenches, and they're going to continue that right on through the first round. They go draft offensive tackle in round one, and they go ahead and they draft someone to get after the quarterback in round two. Let's go address two premium positions in one draft, guys. Greg Russo, who is be the best edge rusher left on the board at this point, out of Miami. Greg Russo can line up inside, outside, really like what he brings to the table. I just don't quite think he's as good as Kwity Paye or Jalen Phillips, but the argument could be made for him to be the first edge rusher off the board here. I'm just going to say that he goes here another guy who could play with standing up, but I would much rather see him just play with his hand in the dirt, and I think that's going to be the defensive scheme that comes over from San Fran here with Robert Saleh. So get a guy who can put his hand in the dirt, play inside, outside, go get after the quarterback. And that's what Robert Saleh prided himself on in San Francisco. 24th overall, the Pittsburgh Steelers. This one was kind of a toss-up for me because I wasn't sure if the Pittsburgh Steelers should go offensive tackle here or if they should go running back with Najee Harris, because I love this fit for Najee Harris. But I'm going to say that they go tackle, because the Pittsburgh Steelers are in a position where they would like to win now. They can go address the running back position in the second round, which I think they will in this case. I'm going to say they go grab Liam Eichenberg, the offensive tackle out of Notre Dame, who is, again, plug and play at left tackle. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they lost Alejandro Villanueva, I believe, this year. And so that's a big hole to fill on the left side of the line. Go draft Liam Eichenberg. Plug and play, day one, you're good. 25th overall, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars, and this might be a little bit of a surprise pick. Another guy similar to Eric Stokes, who has been really building a name for himself over the past month or so. Trayvon Morig is a free safety out of TCU, the Horned Frogs. This guy's a center fielder with great playmaking ability. Okay, and the Jacksonville Jaguars need that. I think that Urban Meyer is going to be all over this. 6'1", 208, he's weighing in at. Similar to J.C. Horn, who I finished mentioning earlier, this is a guy who's got great playmaking ability while the ball is in the air. This is a guy you're just going to throw out in maybe a cover three scheme. Just going to be that free safety, that center fielder for you, similar to how we've seen Earl Thomas for so many years. He's going to be that guy to just go track the ball down, maybe generate a game-changing turnover for you. I love the fit here with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I love the fact that they go out, grab their future quarterback, and then their future center fielder here in Trayvon Moehrig at 25th overall. Let's go to the Cleveland Browns at 26th overall. And Cleveland Browns actually do have a nice roster here. They don't have a crazy amount of needs. They could grab somebody to complement Myles Garrett on the opposite side of the defensive line to get after the quarterback. But I'm going to say they address the linebacker position here. I do like Mack Wilson over there in Cleveland, but I don't think that he's quite the answer that they're looking for. With that being said, and I'm going to try not to butcher his name, Jeremiah Owusu-Koroma, the linebacker out of Notre Dame. JOK, that's what we're gonna call him. Okay, JOK, he is a prototypical linebacker in today's NFL. 6'2, 216. This guy can fly and this guy can bang. This guy would be a great fit for the Cleveland Browns. Tons of versatility, tons of athletic ability. And this would fit a big need for the Cleveland Browns as well. Like they are more or less taken care of on the back end. They have a talented line. Again, they could add to that, but I think that they can do that later in the draft. Right now, I mean, Jeremiah, like JOK here, this is a guy who I originally actually had going to in my first mock drafts, going 17th overall to the Las Vegas Raiders. So the fact that this guy is now going 26th overall, this is substantial value for the Cleveland Browns at this point in the draft. So Cleveland, go jump all over him. As we wind down here in the first round, we have 27th overall, the Baltimore Ravens, going addressing that edge rusher position for the simple reason that Matt Judon, they lost in free agency. They weren't willing to pay him. Now they need somebody. The Ravens are still in a position where they feel they need to win now. They're in Lamar Jackson's rookie contract window still. They need to be adding pieces around him on both sides of the ball to go try and make a run here and compete with the Kansas City Chiefs. And they really need to refill this edge rusher position. The Ravens have struggled over the past couple of off seasons. They lost Za'Darius Smith. They lost Matt Judon. They've lost Terrell Suggs a while ago as well. Like, they're kind of losing their edge rushers here that they've really done a great job of building up. And Azeez Ojulari, the edge rusher out of Georgia, hopefully will be the next great edge rusher out in Baltimore. So the other thing is Azeez can also play. I think that Azeez has the ability to play inside if you need him to. I don't think that he necessarily will in this defense. I more just see him as a off the ball linebacker, lining up in that 2-point stance off the edge. And I really think that he's going to be able to just come in and fill a hole right away. Like, Azeez is going to be one of those guys too, where I don't think that we need to expect him to come in and be an immediate big time producer, but I think that he has the ability to. Definitely needs some refining on his pass rushing skills, but I really like what I saw of him on tape. And again, of most importance, that the Baltimore Ravens just need to fill this need here at edge rusher position. So I really do like the pick of Azeez Ojulari here, the edge rusher from Georgia, going to the Ravens at 27th overall. Going to 28th overall, the New Orleans Saints have cut just about everybody in the organization this offseason. They entered the offseason $100 million in the red, and they needed to clear that cap space quickly. I've seen rumors of them cutting Marshawn Lattimore, maybe parting with Taysom Hill. They didn't have to do either. They were able to clear their cap space without doing that. They still have a little ways to go, so they still could trade or cut one of those guys. Well, I don't think they'll cut either, but trade one of those guys. As it stands right now, if the draft were happening today, I think linebacker's probably their biggest need. They could go with another cornerback to complement Marshawn. They could go with another wide receiver now that Emmanuel Sanders is out of the picture. But I think that linebacker right now is a position at this point in the draft. There's a few great linebackers at the late parts of this draft that are going to be this year. And Nick Bolton, the linebacker out of Missouri, is one of them. Nick Bolton is just a speedy linebacker. Fast, fast, fast. Flies around the field. Very explosive, very twitchy is what a word that we like to use in when you're talking about scouting a player. Twitch is just that ability to really, as soon as the ball is snapped, just go. Just go. That explosiveness, that boom, twitch. You know, and so Nick Bolton possesses that. And again, when you're getting into the later portions of the draft here, it's not necessarily the best player available that you're taking. You are starting to maybe take to address a need here, because if you're in the late portion of the draft here, you're probably a team that's going to be contending. in this year. And so you're looking to add those pieces that are just going to really be able to help fill out the roster and maybe add to a position where you do have a need. And that way you can hopefully take that next step in making your Super Bowl run. And with that being said, we have the Green Bay Packers, my Green Bay Packers, who made the NFC Championship for the second straight year in 2020. And the Packers have a couple places they could go with this. They could go offensive tackle. They could also go interior defensive line. They could go linebacker. They could go wide receiver here. Packers have a few different places they could go, but I'm going to say they go the interior defensive line, which I actually, for the longest time, have had the Packers go offensive tackle here to just grab a plug and play right tackle here. But I think that they're going to go and grab Christian Barmore, the Alabama interior defensive lineman. And the reason being is the Packers have really struggled to stop the run, especially in key games over the past few years with this Mike Pettine defense. But now that Joe Barry is coming over from the Rams, bringing over this Vic Fangio scheme with him, I think that Christian Barmore is there's going to be a little bit more of an emphasis to stop the run more so. And Christian Barmore is going to be able to fill in very nicely with that. Going to be able to complement Kenny Clark, as well as you have Rashawn Gary, you have Preston Smith, you have Za'Darius Smith there. This could be just another addition to a very stud defensive line. And again, when you're talking about focusing on putting a stop to the run, there's Christian Barmore is probably the best interior defensive lineman in this draft. And I think that there would be a lot of value in getting him here at 29th overall if you're the Green Bay Packers. Last three picks, we have the Buffalo Bills taking a running back, Najee Harris, out of Alabama. And some people might be saying, what? Running back for the Buffalo Bills? Well, listen, guys, the Buffalo Bills went and grabbed Mitchell Trubisky. No, I'm just kidding. That doesn't have anything to do with this, the quarterback position. But the running back room in Buffalo right now, Devin Singletary, Zach Moss, who I think they've taken in back-to-back drafts. They have also Christian Wade in that room. They have Antonio Williams as well. They need a lead dog, a solidified lead dog. I like what Devin Singletary brings to the table. I like what Zach Moss brings to the table. But the Buffalo Bills were throwing the ball way too much last year. They need somebody who they can just turn to and give the ball and make a play happen. Put Najee Harris in that offense and watch that offense explode. I really like what Najee Harris could do in this offense, especially now that they have Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs in that offense. That could be a very explosive offense like it was last year, but Najee Harris, a stud running back like this, and the first running back in this mock draft off the board, I think that that's the type of talent that he is. He could take this offense to the next level. 30th overall, we have the Kansas City Chiefs, who I'm still a little sour at. They didn't cover 4 points in the Super Bowl. Got blown out, for that matter. Nevertheless, they're at 31st overall. They are taking Dylan Randunes, out of the offensive tackle out of North Dakota State University. This is a guy who lined up at left tackle primarily for the Bisons, and really good athleticism, really, really athletic player here. 6'5" and 300 pounds is what I have him listed at. And ability, and another note that I have made here on him is that he also has the ability to be a swing tackle as well. Now, the Kansas City Chiefs parted with both of their starting tackles here in Mitchell Schwartz, and I'm failing to remember their right tackle there that they parted ways with in the offseason, but they were able to bring back Mike Remmers, who was scheduled to hit free agency, so that should be their right tackle on week one. They need a left tackle now to protect Patrick Mahomes. Dylan Radunes, who is maybe not on a lot of people's boards right now, is a guy who could go in first round. I think this is a guy who, one of those names who might surprise a couple people at the back of the first round that could go here. And we always see these names, a couple of names where we say, whoa, who is that guy? That guy wasn't really on my board, wasn't on the radar, wasn't getting a lot of hype. Dylan is one of those guys, and I think that he's a guy who just might sneak into the back half of the first round strictly based on the need that the Kansas City Chiefs have here. And to wrap up mock draft 1.0, you guys, I know this has been a long episode. Thank you for sticking it out here. 32nd overall, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are bringing in Travis Etienne, the running back out of Clemson. Another running back draft pick that people might be saying, what? And that is the reason is the running back position for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We saw how successful they were with Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones as the two-headed monster there in Tampa last year. Tampa is bringing back pretty much the entire crew. I don't think Leonard Fournette or Antonio Brown are coming back. Maybe AB. I could actually see AB coming back on a cheap deal. I don't know if Leonard Fournette is coming back, though. And if he is not, they really do need another running back to complement Ronald Jones and maybe take over possibly at some point in the season. Travis Etienne is on a lot of people's big boards, is the number one running back in this draft. So to get him behind Najee Harris could be a big value pick for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Travis Etienne has some big time playmaking ability. You just want to talk about another ridiculous weapon to add to this ridiculous offense that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have. Travis Etienne is that guy. I, as a Packers fan, a guy who, as a fan of a team who will be hopefully playing, who will hopefully run into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, not sure I can say I'm necessarily looking forward to that, especially if they do grab Travis Etienne. Definitely looking forward to the challenge, but that is a tough opponent right there, Tampa Bay, especially they're bringing everybody back. Last comment I'll make is just on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is the fact that continuity is such an underrated thing when you are talking about building a championship roster. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers obviously understand that. And everybody is taking some pay cuts. Everybody is shifting around their money, allocating money elsewhere in order to help the team out so they can free up money. That way they can bring the whole band back together and try and run it back. Can't say I hope they are successful in doing so, but they are absolutely primed to do so by, oh my goodness, it's going to be another year where Tampa Bay is going to be a team to look out for there in Florida. So that is the mock draft, you guys. I hope you guys enjoyed it. That was a lot of picks to go through. I'm going to be back hopefully shortly with the Free Agency Frenzy 2021 breakdown, where I'm going to be analyzing each team and what I think this means for them. And we'll also be back eventually before draft time with at least one more mock draft episode, maybe two of them. We'll see how I'm feeling. Maybe we can get some guests on here, figure out a collaborative mock draft episode as well. We will see. But I hope you enjoyed. Leave some messages, some comments if you can. Maybe even leave a rating if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Music. And be sure to follow me on Twitter or Instagram at JFrySam. That's going to do it for us, though, today on this first episode, this first mock draft 1.0 of the 2021 NFL Draft. I'm Josh FrySam. Thank you for listening to Outside the Gridiron. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Outside the Gridiron with Josh FrySam. Follow Josh on Twitter and Instagram at JFrySam and leave us a review on iTunes. For more episodes, subscribe to Outside the Gridiron on your favorite podcast service.